Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the July NJEDA Telephonic Board Meeting. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Please be advised today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the line for public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public will be advised to press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad to be placed into queue to speak and provide comment. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the numbers. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star and then 0. I would now like to turn the conference over to Chairman Kevin Quinn. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Good morning, everyone. Tim, if you could read the open public meeting notice.
Thanks. Good morning, Chairman and members of the board. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice this meeting has been sent to the Star-Ledger and the Times of Trenton at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State. Pursuant to the Internal Revenue Code of 1986, as amended, this is a public hearing, and comments are invited on any private activity bonds projects presented today. Mr. Chairman, back to you.
Great. Thank you, Tim. Manera, if you could do a roll call, please.
Okay. Chairman Kevin Quinn.
Here.
Vice Chairman Charles Farlow.
Here.
Phil Alagia. Okay, he'll be joining later. Virginia Bauer.
Here.
Fred Dumont.
Here.
Aisha Glover. Okay, she'll join later. Rosemary Hicks.
Present.
Marcia Marley. Marcia Marley. Okay. Rob Shimko.
Here.
Brian Wilson from the Governor's Office.
Here.
Banking Commissioner Marlene Jarrity.
Present.
State Treasurer Elizabeth Moyo.
Here.
Roberto Sabarenas for DOL Commissioner Angelo.
Here.
Elizabeth Dragon for DEP Commissioner Lacarette.
Here.
Okay, and let me double check again. Phil Alagia? No? Okay, Aisha Glover? No? Okay, Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Great. Thank you, Manera.
Sorry, this is Danielle. Marcia Marley is now on, I believe.
Yes, I am on.
Okay, great.
All right. Just for directors and staff, we have a very ambitious agenda here today. We have 26 votes that we need to take, which we haven't gotten back and accumulated all the data, but it's certainly a record in the two-plus years I've been at the EDA. So I just ask for everybody's focus and attention. As we get started here, you'll each have in front of you the June 9th EDA board meeting minutes for review and approval. And again, as we've done in the past, please state your name when making a motion or seconding. Can I get a motion to approve the June 9th meeting minutes?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second? Thank you, Marlene. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Thank you. I have some brief chairman remarks this morning. As we saw over the July 4th weekend, New Jersey's back, and our businesses are beginning to recover. Thanks to Governor Murphy's leadership and advocacy by our state congressional delegation, the American Rescue Plan funds are coming to New Jersey. The EDA is using this support to stand up new programs for businesses to help them recover from COVID-19 and prepare for long-term success. We continue to make progress rolling out the programs created under the Economic Recovery Act of 2020. Today, the board will consider program rules for the updated Angel Investor Tax Credit Program and the new PPE manufacturing tax credit program. Looking to the post-COVID future, we're laying the foundation for the rapid growth of new industries in New Jersey that will create jobs and drive economic growth for years. Along those lines, New Jersey just awarded the largest combined solicitation for offshore wind in the nation. This is an important first step, an important additional step for our growing wind industry, and the EDA is supporting this growth with new construction like the New Jersey Wind Port and new programs to provide trading for workers in offshore wind. We are also supporting other new industries in New Jersey, such as esports and fintech. These initiatives will prepare New Jersey to lead the economy of tomorrow. Now, with that, I will turn it over to Tim for the CEO report. Tim.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and consistent with your reminder of the ambitious nature of our agenda, I'll be brief so we can get to the many votes and items for your consideration. I'll just echo everything the chairman just said. There's a lot going on, and I think the news, you know, continues to be the proportion of good news to difficult news continues to get better and better, both across the state and specifically with regard to the economy and the pandemic. The programs that we've stood up and are continuing to run as we speak, I think we're having a big impact. We're getting very close to 80,000 businesses directly supported via our COVID programs over the last 15 or 16 months, including phase four, which is approved, you know, more than $230 million of funding, and gotten that out the door, you know, both expeditiously and appropriately, with the appropriate oversight and controls. So I think that, you know, the impact of those programs and the effort that's gone into them has gone a long way. At the same time, we're continuing to stand up new kind of COVID-related programs. Phase two of our loan program will launch next week, the pre-registration, which is a $10 million federally funded, federal USEDA specifically funded program. And we're today going to discuss a new program to support the arts and performing venues part of our economy. It was, you know, particularly hard hit during this crisis. We also continue to support things like, you know, and roll out and take new applications for Sustain and Serve, which has been just a home run, you know, whatever metaphors you prefer to use, but with the exciting kind of extraordinary impact kind of metaphors of just making a huge impact in the lives of people who need, you know, food and restaurants that need the business. And so we're incredibly excited about that. The other thing I'll just mention, and we won't be considering, other than one exception, most of this today, but we'll be talking about a lot over the coming months. The budget that Governor Murphy just signed contains a number of important funding pieces, you know, money for supporting a number of different initiatives that we're focused on. The EDA is part of a consortium that's going to be responsible for a $100 million investment in the childcare sector. I think is an incredibly important recognition of the importance both of that sector and of the broadening of how we think about economic development and infrastructure. I think, if, you know, 15 or 18 or 24 months ago, we've been talking about, you know, making a major investment via the EDA and our partners at DCF and DHS in childcare. We said, is that really economic development? I think the last 18 months have underscored and clarified that point quite aggressively, that it's an important industry in its own right, and it's an important economic enabler. It's one of the fundamentals of our economy. So we're excited about the opportunity to help out there. There's also funding for the wind port in a big way. There's significant Main Street funding. We'll be back at the August board talking about the new Main Street program that was part of the Economic Recovery Act. There's funding to double the small business bonding readiness program. There's $10 million to support the Black and Latino seed fund that we've been so excited about for a long time, and now we finally get to do it. And so to that, as well as a $55 million innovation strategic investment fund, we will talk about it in a little bit more detail today. I think an extraordinary recognition of the need to continue to invest in our economy, because the pandemic is, touch wood, you know, over or close to over or receding or whatever the right vocabulary for that is, but there's a lot of healing to be done and a lot of growth to be had. You know, the opportunities in front of us are extraordinary. I think there's been, you know, broad recognition of New Jersey's momentum, including just yesterday, and the Treasurer should comment on this. She knows all the facts, but the credit rating upgrade, what a great news that is, and a great momentum demonstrator for the state, that we can make the kind of investments you need to do the right fiscal things, and also build a stronger and fairer economy through things like increasing the minimum wage and making the kind of family-supporting investments that Governor Murphy has led over the last 3.5 years. So, again, for the first time in a while, the good news significantly outweighs the bad news, and I think the future is bright. We've got a lot of work to do, including a lot of items to get through today. So I will yield the floor back to you, Mr. Chairman, unless there's any questions.
Great. Thank you, Tim. Any questions for Tim? Well, let's move on to our agenda. Our first committee is the COVID-19 Response Committee. Aisha Glover, would you like to say a few words in advance of the items for today?
Sure. Good morning. Thank you, Chair. And I guess just really briefly, I'm excited to see both of these items come before the board. We discussed them, of course, in our committee, one of which will be phase four of the small business grant program. So particularly excited for how many micro businesses the program has reached in the first three phases. So just continue to be impressed by the phenomenal work underway by the staff and all the evaluations coming out of the committee. I should say evaluations and critical questions. So do appreciate the participation from the committee members and everything that the staff has taken off. So I'll just turn it back over to you so we can get into it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Aisha. So our first item is the NJEDA Phase 4 Small Business Emergency Grant Program, additional funding. Patience Purdy, Director, Strategic and Program Initiatives, presenting. Patience.
Good morning, Chairman Quinn. Thank you, and members of the board. This morning, you have before you a request for additional funding for the Phase 4 Small Business Emergency Grant Program. There are four approvals requested there, the first being to approve delegation to the CEO to accept $125 million in funds from the Coronavirus State Fiscal Recovery Fund, enacted as part of the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021, and contained in pending legislation for the NJEDA Phase 4 Emergency Grant Program. The approval to execute the corresponding MOU with DCA, the Department of Community Affairs, and to approve an increase of $225 million to the delegated authority of the Chief Executive Officer to accept state or federal CRF or SFRS funds for the program and delegated authority to increase the allowable percentage of funds dedicated to administrating the program. For some background, back in April 14th of 2021, you approved phase four of the Small Business Emergency Grant. Applications for that program opened May 3rd and closed on May 19th, and close to 30,000 applications were submitted. All that's laid out for you in the memo. After and in response to that high number of pre-registrations, an additional $235 million in funding for small businesses was enacted by the legislator and Governor Murphy. $200 million of that was dedicated to the Phase 4 program. At that time, the governor also announced that Phase 4 registration and application process would reopen for those that had missed the initial deadlines. To support these additional applicants, the legislature has passed and is waiting for signature an additional $125 million for the grant program. That is laid out as follows in your memo with $55 million for micro businesses, $15 million for food and beverage establishments, $45 million for businesses and nonprofits that are not food and beverage or child care providers, and $10 million for child care providers. The legislation will allow NJEDA to reallocate uncommitted funds between those categories and including the Arts and Culture Program with a five-day notice to the Joint Budget Oversight Committee. The state has elected to have all SFRS funding go through DCA, similarly to the way it was approached during Sandy. And the MOU between the authority and DCA will be in the same substance to the MOU that we have currently with the Department of Treasury, and will have a statement of assurances listing the federal requirements and reporting that needs to be done. To date for that, unless otherwise required by federal law, the specifications for the grant program will stay the same. And as part of the SFRS, 2.5% is dedicated for administrative costs. Out of these, we propose to use up to $3 million for such costs. To date, in your memo, 18,279 applications for just over $200 million have been approved for the Phase 4 program, but as Tim said earlier, that number is now almost 21,000 approvals and over $230 million. We did receive 13,517 pre-registrations for that reopening of the phase four. And to date, we have approximately 7,200 full applications submitted. That application window closes tomorrow at 5 p.m. Some information on those approvals and how the program has worked. On June 14th, for the initial round of the Phase 4 program, approximately 13,500 applications were under review, meaning the EDA needed to reach out and get additional information from those applicants. And now that number is down to just under 3,300. So we're moving through this process efficiently and as quickly as we can, given the parameters and the needs for compliance and oversight. So to conclude, we're looking for four approvals: the delegation to the CEO to accept the $125 million in funds, the execution of the corresponding MOU with DCA, increase to the delegation to accept an additional $225 million in funds, and delegated authority to the CEO to increase the allowable percentage of funds dedicated to administering the program. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Do we have any questions for patients? If we have no questions for patients, can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer. Go ahead.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
This is Liz.
Thank you, Liz. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item on the agenda is the use of Coronavirus Relief Fund and Coronavirus State Fiscal Recovery Fund appropriations and creation of the New Jersey Community Stage Relief Grant Program. Richard Kasman, Chief Economist and Director of Policy and Data Analytics, presenting. Richard.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman Quinn and members of the board. What you have in front of you is a memorandum for use of Coronavirus Relief Fund and Coronavirus State Fiscal Recovery Fund appropriations for creation of the New Jersey Community Stage Relief Grant Program. This program is intended to make grant funding available to for-profit establishments that organize, promote, produce, manage, or host live events or performances by performing artists and have experienced a revenue loss from Q2 of 2019 to Q2 of 2020. As background, one of the industries most disrupted by COVID-19 has been arts and culture industry, as COVID-19 restrictions prohibited or restricted public gatherings, resulting in a significant reduction in live events and performances, and reduced attendance at these events. This negatively impacted not only venues that host live performances and events, but also hurt establishments that organize, promote, produce, manage these live events, and the performing artists that perform at these events. Members will be asked to approve one MOU with the Department of the Treasury for $7.5 million in funds from the Coronavirus Relief Fund, including administrative costs of up to $357,000. One delegation to the CEO to approve an MOU with the Department of Community Affairs for $10 million in funds from the Coronavirus State Fiscal Recovery Fund, enacted in the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021, including administrative costs for up to $243,900. For total administrative funds, to issue one or more purchase orders to 22nd Century Technologies to hire temporary employees up to a maximum aggregate cost of $600,000. We'll also seek delegation of authority to approve, decline, issue final administrative decisions of individual applications, to accept additional funding, up to $15.5 million in funds from Coronavirus Relief Funds, and accept additional funding of up to $20.5 million in funds from the Coronavirus State Fiscal Recovery Fund. We also are seeking delegation to extend the deadline for disbursement and use of funds, reallocate funds from or to other CRF or SFRF funded programs, and or return to New Jersey Treasury any amounts remaining. In terms of the program eligibility, the initial law requires that the authority limit eligibility to for-profit establishments that host at least two regularly occurring live performances or events per week, that charge admission fees for these performances, that pay the performing artists on a a basis of either percentage of sales or some other guarantee. Applicants have to have incurred at least a 25% or greater operating revenue loss in Q2 2020 versus 2019. And eligibility also authorizes the NJTA to establish the size of awards and other program requirements. In order to assist the authority with the assessing the eligibility of applications under the program, we have a few different criteria, one of them being an eligible NAICS code to ensure the establishment could realistically host, organize, promote, produce, or manage a live event. Also, the ability to certify that if they don't fall under a NAICS code, that they could certify that 50% or more of their primary business activity is in operating revenue from organizing, promoting, producing, managing, or hosting two regularly live, occurring live performances per week. Applicants must also certify venue capacity with the presentation of a certificate of occupancy. Establishments with a leased or owned venue capacity of greater than 2,500 are not eligible for this program. So once again, we have to see two live performances per week, whether admissions were fees were charged, determine performing artists performing at the event over any three-month period are paid through some sort of a mutually beneficial structure. The authority must establish that a 25% or greater operating revenue loss was incurred. In terms of the grant calculation, awards will be calculated based on 30% of revenue loss up to a maximum grant reward of $300,000, net of any duplication of benefits or federal award reduction. Grant awards will be calculated as 30% of the decline in operating revenue in 2020 versus 2019. The grant amount cannot exceed the establishment's unmet need. Applicants for this program will be accepted on a first-come, first-served basis, and 33% of the available money will be directed to support establishments that have commercial business addresses in a census tract that was eligible to be selected as the New Jersey Opportunity Zone. So to conclude, members are asked to approve one MOU with the Department of Treasury for $7.5 million for CRF funds, one delegation to the CEO to approve an MOU with the Department of Community Affairs for $10 million in funds, overall administrative funds available to be used as a purchase order with 22nd Century Technologies for $600,000, and also delegation to approve the client issue final administrative decisions to accept additional funds from CRF of up to $15.5 million and from SFRF for $20.5 million, and to extend the deadline for disbursement and use of funds to reallocate funds to CRF or SFRF funded programs and to return monies not used to the Treasury. I am happy to answer any questions, and thank you.
So, Richard, this is Kevin Quinn. This is kind of a kitchen sink kind of thing here. And just to abstract yourself up, you know, at 10,000 feet, what we're trying to do here is address gaps in our prior programs that addresses the needs of for-profit institutions who host live events, as well as other nonprofits, and establish, one, how to getting the programs funded, addressing the gaps in our prior programs, and then delegating authority the staff to enable a timely disbursement of monies to these businesses that have kind of fallen between the cracks. Is that a decent summary?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and Kevin, it's Tim. Let me just jump in just to add a friendly amendment to that. The arts sector in general, you know, we can have a competition for, you know, sectors that were hardest hit by the pandemic, but arts and culture and performing arts venues would have a strong argument to make, as with restaurants and childcare and lots of other sectors. The arts were, you know, a priority sector identified by the legislature and the governor. Some specific funding was allocated. Some of it for the nonprofits was sent to the Arts Commission, which is part of the Secretary of State's office, and they do a great job administering and working with nonprofit arts, and then the for-profits came our way. And there was some very specific language in that legislation, that leads to some of the very specific language in our board memo today about how eligibility is determined and calculated and all that. So, yeah, this is a very kind of purpose-built program by the legislature and the governor to address the arts.
Great. Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Richard. Other questions for Richard?
Hi, this is Rosemarie. Just a quick question. This particular program is geared more to mid-size venues in the arts. And the only reason I ask is because it's two performances a day. I mean, two performances a week is a lot. So I'm just assuming that this is probably more for mid-size, more established art venues, correct?
Right.
That's right. And go ahead.
I would say for a couple things. One, the SBA just released a huge initiative for shuttered venues that really targeted those big arenas, like 18,000, 10,000 more. This one is for anybody that has 2,500 or fewer seating capacity availability. So think about like Wilmont Theater, think about like Stone Pony. It's for those that have been really shut down, could not operate. And it also includes promoters, which is a big thing as well. Like they're part of that ecosystem that's around this area. So again, very intentional about the number of seats that we aren't getting into the big arenas, but making sure that we get everybody up to 2,500 seats, in addition to those kind of ancillary roles, which includes promoters, et cetera.
Right. Okay.
And then smaller venues and places that had under 50 full-time employees, full-time equivalents. Excuse me. I can hear Bruce's patients correcting me in the background. Full-time equivalents would have been and continue to be eligible for the kind of regular phases 1 through 4 programs. So lots of arts or smaller arts organizations got funding through there, but this is sort of that, as you described, kind of that group in the middle focused on here.
Right. That's what I thought. Just wanted to make sure. I think it's a good step forward. So thanks.
Great.
Thanks, Rosie.
Any other questions for Richard? If we have no questions, can I get a motion to approve?
Elizabeth Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
Marlene, can you second?
Thank you, Marlene. Any more discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. The next items on our agenda are policy related. And as chair of the policy committee, I can share that the next several items under economic growth and later in the agenda under authority matters are meaningful and significant initiatives relating to the adoption of PPE manufacturing rules, several MOUs linked to energy and program efficiency, and strategic funding linked to the success of the New Jersey Windport project. The impact of this work cannot be overstated. The staff is doing a tremendous amount of work here. Much progress is being made. I'm very proud of the work that's being done, and staff working steadfastly to achieve the economic growth goals for the state of New Jersey. The first item under economic growth, special adopted new rules and concurrent proposed rules, New Jersey PPE Manufacturing Tax Credit Program. Douglas York, Director, Sector Development, Advanced Manufacturing, presenting. Doug.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. May I just ask someone to acknowledge that they can hear me?
We can hear you.
Doug, go for it.
Okay, thank you. So the PPE Manufacturing Tax Credit Program is an incentive program to encourage job creation through the local manufacturing of personal protective equipment. The program's tax credits will be available for investment that occurs during the tax years 2020 through 2022, and the program will accept applications for completed projects only. The program begins with a series of eligibility criteria relating to the manufacturing facility itself, the amount of capital investment, and the number of jobs. These criteria are all explicit in the statute. All jobs and all capital investment must be in a qualified facility. There are 5 tests for a qualified facility. An applicant need only meet 1. Second, the capital investment must meet certain thresholds varying by geography, the 7 southern counties receiving a slight advantage, and by type of construction, new versus improvements. And third, the projects must result in the minimum number of new or retained jobs. Again, there was a slight advantage to projects in the southern counties. I want to note that the concept of a retained job in the PPE manufacturing program is a bit atypical. The focus here is based on averting layoffs that were at risk due to the economic downturn, not on ongoing jobs that were at risk of leaving the state. Okay, the tax credits are available in two forms. Again, statutorily explicit, a sort of base or core credit that is $10,000 for each job involved in or supporting the manufacture of PPE, and three additional credits for complying with certain geographic location and social factors. These credits vary between $1,000 and $1,500 per job. Applicants will be required to maintain the positions on which the award is based for a period of 5 years, and no credits will be awarded for jobs that have previously been used as a basis for any other EDA financial incentives. Taxpayers will use the awarded credits in the tax year corresponding to the completion date of capital investment. Credits that exceed the applicant's liability in their tax in that applicable tax year will be paid out as an overpayment, meaning there are no transfer provisions here, no need for transfer provisions. The available credits will be limited to $500,000 per project and $10 million per year for all projects. I note for the members two issues relating to the definition of PPE. The statute contains a detailed definition of PPE, but also explicitly allows the board to expand it. The staff is recommending the addition of two items that were not included in the statute, those being head coverings and footwear coverings or booties. Both are common forms of PPE, particularly in healthcare settings. In addition, the statute requires the CEO, Tim, to consult with the Commissioner of Health regarding the specifics of what constitutes PPE. We have done so, including the language adding head coverings and booties. Finally, let me say, based on the staff's direct engagement with dozens of PPE manufacturing companies throughout the pandemic, we believe that the applicants will be small businesses, and that while there will be interest in the program, the actual count of eligible applications will be low, perhaps very low. That concludes my overview. I welcome any questions.
Great. Thank you, Doug. Any questions for Doug?
Hi, Doug. This is Rosemary. I'm sorry. Okay. This is Rosemary. Just a quick question. Why do you think that the applicants will be small businesses based on the way in which this is structured? What did you find in your research to think that that's going to be the case?
Rosemary, it is mostly anecdotal evidence. As I mentioned, over the course of the last year, for a variety of reasons, we have been in contact with dozens and dozens of companies that either made or distributed or were thinking about making PPE, and all of those entities were small businesses. As you may know, there was near zero production of PPE in New Jersey prior to the pandemic, and the responses have basically been small businesses that have pivoted or added equipment to make it as a new or additional product. And a small number of folks that have that we're aware of that have just planted a flag and built a new facility to create PPE. And again, all of those entities, in our experience, being the much smaller ones.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason that I asked is because when we had the other piece of the PPE when we were doing with allowing people to buy PPE equipment through Staples and some of the others. I know that there was a conversation about partnering with small businesses in Jersey, and we couldn't find or get that connection. So I was just wondering what had changed that this would be a stand up on its own program. But,
hey, it's Tim. I think the distinction here is the where you correctly identifying a challenge we have with the PPE platform was businesses with the scale needed to do kind of the retail and the distribution of that. The manufacturing, you know, and it continues to, you know, this evolves not quite day to day, but month to month, quarter to quarter. You know, more and more smaller businesses, as Doug indicated, have sort of pivoted and added a line of business or added, you know, bought a machine that they can make the right kind of, do the right kind of sewing or, you know, whatever the right technology innovation is to make this kind of equipment. So the production side, the manufacturing side, we've seen some growth on the small business side of the equation. But the kind of distribution, retail, wholesale market is still absolutely dominated by the types of partners we had on that platform, you know, last year, for sure.
Thanks.
All right, other questions for Doug? If we have no questions for Doug, can I get a motion to approve?
Elizabeth Dragon, motion to approve.
I'll make the motion.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
Second, Aisha Glover.
Thank you, Aisha. Any more discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item on the agenda, approval for targeted industries definition for the Economic Recovery Fund. David Ramsey, Manager, Strategic Sector Development, presenting. David.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairperson Quinn and members of the board. Just by way of background, and as you're aware, the board approved targeted industry definitions for use with the New Jersey Emerge Program this past May in accord with the authority's implementation of the Economic Recovery Act. Before you now is a memorandum with one request that the same list and definitions of targeted industries that has been approved for the New Jersey Emerge Program also be approved for newly defined features of the authority's Economic Recovery Fund. These new permitted uses of ERF funds were also included as part of the ERA. In the coming months, EDA staff intends to develop new policies and projects utilizing these new permitted uses. For example, as cited specifically in the amended statute, we may seek approval for a new policy to allow the authority to become a member in third-party innovation centers that align with these targeted industries. As mentioned during the Emerge program presentation in May, these industries are similar to those that the authority has been using over the last several years that were included in the governor's 2018 economic development plan. The only difference is that the overarching industries are broken out with more specificity, as well as the addition of hemp processing. These changes were made specifically in the ERA statute. So thank you for your time and consideration, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may.
Do we have any questions for David? If we have no questions for David, can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Marlene Greedy, second.
Thank you, Marlene. Any more discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Next item on the agenda is approval of policy for Economic Recovery Fund Innovation Centers of Excellence. Alex Hydren, Senior Project Officer, Economic Growth, presenting. Alex.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members of the board. This memo requests the members of the board to approve policies for utilizing the Economic Recovery Fund to undertake development of or investment in strategic innovation centers to accelerate economic recovery and drive the long-term growth of the state's innovation economy, and the use of the $55 million appropriated in the 2022 state budget to the EDA's Economic Recovery Fund for the purpose of developing strategic innovation centers in accordance with these policies. These funds will be used to fund strategic innovation centers projects that are focused on the targeted industries identified in the previous memo we just discussed and approved. These strategic innovation center projects may arise from EDA-led opportunities or from inbound unsolicited investment opportunities. This memo defines strategic innovation centers as facilities that either directly support research and development, innovation, or entrepreneurship, or are aimed at solving specific problems in new and innovative ways. They can take many forms, such as accelerators, incubators, innovative service delivery centers, or multi-tenant innovation clusters. The memo also proposes two policies related to the development of additional strategic innovation centers across the state. The first policy applies to opportunities for EDA staff to take a lead role in developing strategic innovation centers that align with the ERF targeted industries. These opportunities may entail EDA building or overseeing the operations of a Strategic Innovation Center, or making an early investment that serves as a catalyst for the project. The second policy provides guidelines for how EDA staff will consider unsolicited investment opportunities for strategic innovation centers. The EDA has historically received and continues to receive numerous unsolicited proposals for centers of excellence or innovation centers. While some proposals could benefit the state and be a good fit for EDA, there is not currently a framework to review and offer to invest in such projects. This policy provides those parameters to ensure all current and future opportunities are reviewed equitably. Should staff determine that a proposal or opportunity qualifies as a strategic innovation center and satisfies these evaluation criteria, staff will work with the relevant party to determine the appropriate investment approach in order to move forward into a fully defined investment. Whether the Strategic Innovation Center project is EDA-led or a result of an unsolicited investment opportunity, all projects will be brought to the board for approval. Staff anticipate that approved projects will generally require $10 to $20 million of state funding and that no single project would receive more than $25 million. This means that with the $55 million available to EDA, we can support approximately 3 to 5 projects. Thank you for your time and consideration, and I welcome any questions you may have.
All right, any questions for Alex? We have no questions for Alex. Can I get a motion to approve?
Some moved. Are you sure?
Motion to approve. Is that Marlene?
That was Aisha.
Aisha. Thank you, Aisha. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Next item on the agenda. Approval of clean energy MOUs between the New Jersey Economic Development Authority and the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities, and between the EDA and the New Jersey Commission on Science, Innovation, and Technology. Fatou Job, Project Officer, Clean Energy Program, Economic Growth, presenting. Fatou.
Thank you, Chairman Quinn, and good morning. We're bringing to the board a memo with 2 MOUs for board approval focused on the use of money from BPU's Clean Energy Fund towards Phase 2 of the Clean Tech Programs that are aimed at assisting early-stage companies in New Jersey doing research and development in the clean energy, clean tech field. The first MOU will be between EDA and the BPU so that BPU can provide funding of $2.5 million to launch a second phase of the Clean Tech Seed Grant Program and also expand the scope of the Clean Tech R&D Voucher Program. The second MOU will be between EDA and the New Jersey Commission on Science, Innovation, and Technology for EDA to allocate a portion of this funding to CSIT, giving the emphasis on early-stage clean tech companies to deploy also a second and expanded phase of the clean tech programs. Based on prior programs support that EDA has provided to CSIT, EDA will again retain 5% of the BPU funds, and this will go towards admin personnel and overhead costs that are associated with running of these programs. We propose to launch the program and commit all funds from the BPU money no later than year end 2022. I will stop here for any questions.
Any questions for Fatou? If we have no questions, can I get a motion to approve?
Liz Moyo moves.
Thank you, Liz. Can I get a second?
Second, Marcia.
Thank you, Marcia. Any more discussion? No more discussion. All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item on the agenda, offshore wind sector initiatives MOU between the New Jersey EDA and the New Jersey BPU. Jennifer Becker, Managing Director, Wind Institute Development, presenting. Jennifer.
Good morning. Bringing to the board today a request for approval for an MOU between the New Jersey Economic Development Authority and the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities for the BPU to transfer $7 million from the Clean Energy Fund to support Wind Institute-related initiatives. Through Executive Order 79, the governor established the Wind Council, a cross-governmental effort to develop a plan for creating the Wind Institute, which will serve as a center for offshore wind-related workforce training, education, research, and innovation. EDA has been leading the development of the Wind Institute. Last year, EDA and BPU entered into an MOU to transfer $4.5 million that EDA utilized to launch the Offshore Wind Safety Training Challenge and the Offshore Wind Turbine Technician Challenge, two critical first steps towards developing New Jersey's offshore wind workforce and talent pipeline. The MOU before you today will enable BPU to provide an additional $7 million to further expand Wind Institute-related efforts. The funding would support four types of activities. First, the workforce training and education programs that address key challenges and expand stakeholder engagement and understanding about workforce needs and opportunities. Research and innovation programs that unlock market potential and are specifically addressed challenges facing New Jersey's offshore wind industry. And administrative staffing costs to support the launch of the Wind Institute and other operational needs as part of the space assessment and early development costs for the Wind Institute. The MOU includes provisions for EDA and BPU staff to regularly engage on the progress of these initiatives and for EDA to have flexibility in moving funding between the various focus areas. The MOU will be in place for 5 years, but the intent is for EDA to commit these funds to identified programs by the end of June 2022. The MOU also includes a provision that EDA's responsibilities can be assigned to the Wind Institute upon its formation. I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Do we have any questions for Jennifer? If we have no questions for Jennifer, can I get a motion to approve?
Fred Dumas.
I'm sorry, who was that?
Fred Dumas.
Thank you, Fred. Can I get a second?
Second, Wilton.
Thank you, Brian. Any more discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's move on to the port infrastructure. We have four items here, and I will not read all four, but Jonathan is going to cover them in a single presentation. I will then read each item subsequently when it's time for voting. We will need to take four votes on what Jonathan is going to cover in a single presentation. All right, Jonathan. Jonathan Kennedy, Managing Director, Infrastructure Economic Growth, presenting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Windport project is progressing well and remains on track to start construction in calendar 2021. We are also making steady progress in our commercial discussions with potential port tenants, and we're pleased to hear in recent weeks that both awardees, further to the recent NJBPU solicitation process, have committed to use the port for marshalling and manufacturing. We've also secured a significant portion of funding for phase one of the project, with the fiscal 2022 budget committing over $200 million in funding, in addition to the $13.2 million committed previously by NJBPU. In this context, the four items before the board today are about ensuring a timely and seamless transition as the port project moves into its next critical phase, that being from planning and design to construction, and as we progress towards contractual close with port subtenants over the next 18 to 24 months. The items before the board include the award of a construction manager at risk contract to ACOM Tishman and approval of funds for the commencement of pre-construction services. ACOM Tishman is a globally recognized CM with deep project experience in the New Jersey-New York region. ACOM was selected further to a two-step public bid process that commenced in November last year. This process was highly competitive and has resulted in a highly favorable price outcome for the state. The terms of the proposed contract with ACOM encompass both pre-construction and construction phase services, with construction services to be provided with or without a guaranteed maximum price at the authority's discretion. Members also have before them a request for funding for financial and technical advisory services to be provided by Ernst & Young Infrastructure Advisors and WSP USA, respectively, under existing contracts. These items will ensure continuity of professional services support through the next 18 to 24 months. Finally, we are seeking approval of two change orders to the authority's existing contract
with Moffitt and Nickel, the engineer of record on the port project, to assess the potential for beneficial use of dredge material. These change orders respond directly to feedback from federal and state permitting agencies and have the potential to significantly scale the project's environmental benefits. All costs incurred by the authority through these four items will be capitalized alongside all of the project costs and staff time into the development of the port project. The project drawing on state appropriations, other public funding, and supplementary public financing as needed. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Jonathan. Do we have any questions for Jonathan? There's no questions for Jonathan. Jonathan, the first item that we'll vote on is the New Jersey Wind Port Award of Construction Manager at Risk Contract and issuance of a notice to proceed for the Phase 1 pre-construction services. Can I get a motion to approve?
Robert Shimko, approve.
Thank you, Robert. Can I get a second?
Fred Dumont, second.
Marlene Creedy, second.
Thank you, Fred. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions?
Elizabeth Dragon, abstaining due to pending application before the department.
All right. And Elizabeth, you'll be abstaining from all four matters we're voting on with regard to the wind port, correct?
That is correct. I'll be abstaining from all four items.
Great. Thank you, Elizabeth. Next item is to the request for financial and commercial advisor budget increase to approve a $2.5 million budget increase for the financial and commercial advisory services pertaining to the New Jersey Wind Port project under an existing contract. Can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it, please.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Second, Marcia.
Thank you, Marcia. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? Obviously, Elizabeth Dragon abstaining. Next item we have to vote on is the request for funding for technical advisory services budget increase. This is a $2.5 million budget increase for civil and environmental engineering services pertaining to the wind port project under an existing contract. Can I get a motion to approve?
So moved, Wilson.
Thank you, Brian. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second, please.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, the last item we have under the wind port is a request for an increase to the Moffitt and Nickel contract to include engineering and design of beneficial use sites, berthing utilization analysis. This is approving an increase of $844,946 to an existing contract for design and engineering services in relation to the wind port project to provide a feasibility planning and detailed design of potential beneficial use sites proximate to the port, as well as a detailed berthing utilization analysis pertaining to a potential second phase of port development. Can I get a motion to approve?
So moved, Wilson.
Motion to approve.
Thank you, Brian. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? Elizabeth Dragon, DEP. So, folks, we probably have another 10 or so approvals. I would just ask for, if we can just focus on this, we can be finished in an hour as we go through our voting. So we're moving now to incentive programs. Jenny Bauer is the chair of our incentives committee. Jenny, would you like to offer a few words in advance of the incentive items for consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On July 1st, the Incentive Committee met, and again, this very competent staff brought forth a number of items, namely amendments to the Angel Investor Tax Credit, two New Jersey modifications on Grow New Jersey, and four film tax credits that we will now present. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, Jenny. So the first item we have is an amendment to the Angel Investor Tax Credit Program. Clark Smith, Director, Innovation Programs, Economic Growth, presenting. Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and all. The Angel Investor Tax Credit Program was established in 2013. It allows the EDA to approve refundable tax credits to investors in New Jersey's early-stage technology businesses. The maximum tax credit allowed for any qualified investment is $500,000. The program is designed to encourage further private investment in New Jersey's technology ecosystem. The memo contains three updates to the program. The first one is for delegated approval authority. Temporary levels were approved by this board as part of COVID relief. This update will make these temporary levels permanent. All decisions made under delegated authority are reported back to the board on a quarterly basis. The final two requests are for program rules updates that were required because of new legislation. The first comes from a 2019 action. This increased the tax credit amount from 10% of a qualified investment to 20%. It also provided for an additional 5% bonus under two circumstances, which are businesses located in an opportunity zone or a new market tax credit zone, as well as businesses certified as woman or minority owned. These are already implemented into the program, and the board's approval would memorialize the update into the program rules. The second is related to the Economic Recovery Act, which made two program additions. These are an increase to the annual award pool from $25 million to $35 million. And it also expanded the definition of a qualified investment to include investor commitments to venture capital funds. These venture capital funds would be required to deploy at least half of their funds into New Jersey-based businesses. The credit amount would be the same as the existing program, which is 20%, and there would be a 5% bonus for venture funds that make at least half of their investments in New Jersey-based diverse entrepreneurs, which are companies certified as women or minority-owned. This concludes my comments, and I'm happy to take any questions at this time.
Do we have any questions for Clark? If we have no questions for Clark, can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny, I'll move it, please.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Liz Moyle, second.
Thank you, Liz. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item for discussion, we have two New Jersey Grow modification items. Sanofi U.S. Services Incorporated, modification to their award. Susan Greitz, Director, Incentives Relationship Management. Susan.
Good morning, sir. As you said, the first is for Sanofi U.S. Services, Inc., and this is related to a modification to reduce the size and scope of their New Jersey Grow project. On August 8, 2017, they were approved for a $39.9 million Grow award to retain 2,100 employees at their existing 674,000-square-foot non-industrial qualified business facility in Bridgewater. Subsequent to their approval and before the incentive agreement had been executed, Sanofi's parent company underwent a corporate leadership change and began to review all of their real estate holdings. As a result of that review, the company has decided to halve the size of the QBF, further a decision to eliminate certain functions of the QBF and not replace employees lost to attrition in the last year, also reduced expected jobs from 2,100 to 1,800. These changes result in a decreased award from $39.9 million to $27.1 million and a decrease in minimum capital investment from $27 million to $12.8 million. Staff believes the project continues to align to the approved project, albeit smaller in size. It should be noted that although Sanofi has requested to decrease its QBF, it did complete the full anticipated investments and improvements to the property. Also, please note that there have been unpaid fees at the Department of Labor, which the applicant has represented, have been paid. The staff's recommendation and board approval would be conditional upon Department of Labor's confirmation of same. So I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions for Susan? If we have no questions for Susan, can I get a motion to approve?
It's Jenny. I'll move it for you.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Second, Charles Sarlo.
Thank you, Charles. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Next item is M&A Holdings Company, LLC, modification to their GROW award. Susan Greitz presenting. Susan.
Yes, sir. The next modification request we have for you is to modify M&A's GROW New Jersey incentive in two ways. First, to change the definition of project, which is in the incentive agreement, to exclude replacement of a fire suppression system. And secondly, to add a condition to evidence replacement of that same fire suppression system at a later date. So M&A Holding Corporation, or Company, LLC, was approved for GROW New Jersey in 2018 to incent the creation of 8 new GROW-eligible jobs and retain 32 at-risk jobs at an existing 111-square-foot industrial facility in Camden. At the time of approval, landlord, South Jersey Port Corporation, had been cited with a fire code violation, which would have enabled M&A to terminate its lease early, and as a result, the existing jobs were deemed to be at risk by the board. Since the facts surrounding the fire suppression system were critical to the material factor determination, a reference to its replacement and a contribution by M&A were added to the incentive agreement in the project definition. In September of 2020, M&A certified project completion, having met both the requisite capital improvements, and jobs. However, staff learned that the fire suppression system had not been replaced, as the anticipated timeline had been pushed back by the landlord to 2025. M&A's requested that the definition of project be changed to exclude fire suppression systems so that they could move forward and complete the certification process, which would allow EDA staff to request issuance of their 2021 overall tax credit certificate from the Division of Taxation. In order to maintain EDA's ability to ensure that this fire suppression system gets replaced and M&A contributes to the effort, staff recommends adding a condition to the incentive agreement that the fire suppression system be replaced by February 14, 2025, or such later date as the landlord is able to undertake the project if the later date is not due to any action or inaction by M&A. I'm glad to answer any questions you might have on that request.
Do we have any questions for Susan? If we have no questions for Susan, can I get a motion to approve?
Approve, Robert Chimko.
Thank you, Robert. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any more discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, moving on to film and digital media tax credit. We have three items here. David Lawyer, Managing Director of Underwriting, will make one presentation to cover all three, and then we will have three individual votes. David.
Thank you. EDA staff has completed the review and recommends approval of three applications under the Film Tax Credit Program. We have received written confirmation from an outside firm hired to review the production budgets that they are reasonable by industry standards. All the film content has also been reviewed and recommended for approval under the Act by the New Jersey Motion Picture and Television Commission. Total credits utilized across the three recommended approvals is $42.3 million. The first application is Union Square Productions, Inc., who will produce A Good Person. We are recommending an award of $4,740,000, which includes a diversity bonus of $216,256. The second application is Universal Television, LLC, who produced Equalizer S1. We are recommending an award of $38,003,094, which includes a diversity bonus of $2,054,221. The third application is Apophenia, LLC, who will produce Apophenia. We are recommending an award of $290,085. Each project needs its own separate vote.
Thank you, David. Do we have any questions for David? All right. The first item we'll vote on is the Union Square Productions Incorporated, a $3.46 million tax credit. Can I get a motion to approve?
So moved, Wilson.
Thank you, Brian. Can I get a second?
Roberto Sobrani, second.
Thank you, Roberto. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, there was an item on our agenda, Cuttlefish LLC. This item has been withheld from consideration at this meeting. The next item for approval is Universal Television, LLC, tax credits of almost $33 million. Can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Wilton, second.
Thank you, Brian. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Our last item under the Film and Digital Media Tax Credit, Apophenia LLC, tax credits in the amount of $290,000. Can I get a motion to approve?
So moved, Wilson.
Thank you, Brian. Can I get a second?
Second, Marcia.
Thank you, Marcia. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Now we're moving to the Director's Loan Review Committee. Items, Chair of our committee, Marcia Marley. Marcia, would you like to share a few words?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. The Director's Loan Review Committee met on July 1st. At the meeting, the staff presented and the committee discussed a bond volume cap renewal resolution for the Linden Renewable Energy, LLC, as well as authorization for a direct loan for up to $21,782,000 to Fort Monmouth Economic Revitalization Authority, FEMERA, in order to repay the current principal balance owed on bonds issued by the Monmouth County Improvement Authority. The Monmouth County Improvement Authority debt is secured by Phase 2 properties on the former Army base owned by FEMERA, which will be the security for the proposed loan. The staff presented the committee with detailed cash flow projections as well as previous sales information for these properties and also answered questions on ability to repay. I commend the staff for their thorough and professional presentations of these and all the other proposals that are now being presented to the full board for consideration. Chairman, I turn it back over to you.
Great. Thank you, Marcia. So our first item is under bonds, a volume cap renewal resolution. This is Linden Renewable Energy, LLC. David Lawyer, Managing Director, underwriting, presenting. David.
Thank you. The members are requested to approve a volume cap renewal resolution for Linden Renewable Energy, LLC. This resolution will renew the authority's volume cap allocation for the issuance of bonds and provide the applicant a new 60-day period with an additional 30-day extension to close on the approved project. Earlier this year at our April board meeting, the members approved a final bond resolution for Linden, authorizing the issuance of tax-exempt bonds not to exceed $105 million to finance the development of an organic waste anaerobic digester facility. Per the April bond resolution. The allocation of $195 million state volume cap will cease to be effective 60 days from the date of that resolution, not inclusive of a 30-day extension that may be approved at the discretion of the EDA. The applicant and its bond counsel have communicated to EDA staff that the bonds will not be issued within the required time frame due to delays as noted in the memo. The applicant, however, has assured EDA staff that it is diligently working towards the closing of the bonds. So in conclusion, it is recommended that the members approve the volume cap renewal resolution, which essentially renews the $195 million volume cap allocation and provides the applicant a new 60-day period with an additional 30-day extension to close on the approved project. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Do we have any questions for David? If we have no questions for David, can I get a motion to approve?
Motion to approve, Marcia.
Thank you, Marcia. Can I get a second?
It's Jenny. I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any more discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item on the agenda, loans, grants, and guarantees, a direct loan, Fort Monmouth Economic Revitalization Authority, Michael Conti, Senior Real Estate and Credit Underwriter presenting. Michael. Michael? We can't hear you.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Let it rip, Michael.
I'm sorry. Okay, let it go. Requested for approval is up to a 21.782 direct loan to Fort Monmouth Economic Revitalization Authority, which is also known as FEMIRA. The applicant formed in 2010 and has a 20-year mission to redevelop the 400-plus buildings located on about 1,100 acres that was formerly a U.S. Army base that spans parts of Eatontown, Kitten Falls, and Oceanport in Monmouth County. The EDA will utilize the Economic Recovery Fund as the source for the requested loan, which will enable FEMIRA to repay the principal balance owed to Monmouth County Improvement Authority, which originally issued $33.5 million in bonds that have been reduced over the past 4.5 years via 25% of net proceeds from parcel sales on Phase 2 properties that have been sold. The existing loan requires that funds be placed into escrow by October 9, 2021 to fully satisfy the obligation. The proposed loan will have a term of 5 years, will be priced at the greater of the 5-year treasury of 2%, and will be secured by approximately 250 remaining developable acres owned by FEMIRA, known as Phase 2 properties. And when net sales proceeds are received by FEMIRA, 25% is required to be remitted to the EDA to reduce the balance of the loan. Due to the timing of several existing parcels that are under contract for sale, the amount of the authority loan could reduce to as low as $16.4 million if these sales are consummated prior to the proposed loan funding scheduled for October 9, 2021. EDA has past history with FEMIRA. Two $5 million loans closed over the last 3 years. Their existing balance is $7.3 million, and they have been repaid according to terms similar to the proposed loan structure. The authority has reviewed the financial plan of FEMIRA, which evidenced the ability to meet the expenses and repay all obligations over the next 5 years via anticipated proceeds received from the sales of remaining parcels. Based on the timing and the ongoing negotiations with the remaining parcels, staff is also requesting delegated authority to accept the revised projections of cash flows, provided these projections still illustrate a reasonable ability for FEMIRA to repay the proposed loan. Thank you, and I'll be glad to answer any questions.
So do we have any questions for Michael? We have no questions for Michael. Can I get a motion to approve?
Motion.
I'm sorry, who made the motion?
I think Marcia did, and it's Jenny. I'll second, if that's okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Marcia moved, and Jenny seconded. Thank you both. Much appreciated. Any more discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Moving to Hazardous Discharge Site Remediation Fund, summary of NJDEP Hazardous Discharge Site Remediation Fund program projects approved by the Department of Environmental Protection. David Lawyer, Managing Director, Underwriting, presenting. David.
Thank you. Under DEP's Hazardous Discharge Site Remediation Program, we have one request from National Park Borough in the amount of $672,484. The proceeds will be used to fund costs associated with remedial action at a former landfill which has potential environmental areas of concern. It is the applicant's intent upon full site remediation to redevelop the site for renewable energy. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, David. Any questions for David? Can I get a motion to approve?
Elizabeth Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
Liz Moyo, second.
Thank you, Liz. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, folks, we're in the home stretch here. Moving to authority matters. First item is One Gateway Center Property Owner, LLC, First Amendment to the Newark Office Lease. David Noose, Executive Vice President, Real Estate and Community Development, presenting. And I understand, Tim, you may want to say a few words as well.
Yep, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief, as you mentioned, the home stretch here of a long race. This is a part of our ongoing plan to deepen and strengthen our presence in Newark, which has been a success strategically. This goes back to 2018 when we entered into a new lease for new space in Newark in the Gateway Building. And the original plan was to lease more space than we ended up with. We ended up partnering with the governor's office, and they took some space from us, and are paying for it, and is basically a subtenant of ours, which is an unusual relationship for an agency in the governor's office, but that's kind of fun to have them as a tenant essentially. And they've been it's been great to be co-located there. But we're back to the original plan of needing the full space we thought we were going to need, and we were able to grab an opportunistic availability in the same elevator bank at the Gateway Building, which has been again a great recruiting tool for us and a great, I think, place to have meetings and host companies and all that. So this is kind of a continuation of our original plan that we're now back to, and we're excited about the opportunity to continue to grow and strengthen our presence in Newark. With that, Juan, go ahead.
David, do you have anything else you want to add here?
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, I'll keep it brief.
Thank you.
So we're seeking the board's approval to amend our office lease at the Gateway 1 building in Newark to add 6,227 square feet on the 16th floor and to expend up to $500,000 for related furniture, fixtures, and equipment costs, as well as tenant improvement work. Adding the additional 16th floor suite to our existing space will provide about 12,800 square feet for authority use and seating for about 31 additional employees, bringing our total seating capacity in Newark to 59. The lease amendment will add the 16th floor space for the balance of the 14th floor lease term, which runs through February of 2025, with a 5-year renewal option, and will include 3 months free rent. Rent starts at $37.08 per square foot, escalating 3% per year, with an additional $1.75 per square foot charge for tenant electric. That rent rate is identical to what we're currently paying for our 14th floor space. The landlord has pre-built the suite as generic space, so we're anticipating a minimal amount of tenant sit-out to prepare it for our occupancy. Accordingly, we're requesting a $500,000 allowance for furniture fixtures and equipment costs and to fund limited tenant improvement work. That's about a third of what we expended on the 14th floor space. And as a result, we anticipate being able to occupy the space relatively soon, on or about October 1st. I do wish to note that the final version of the memo circulated this morning updates the last two charts to conform the rent figures to the memo's text. Specifically, the revised charts match up the 16th floor rent payments with the rental rates for our 14th floor space, yielding a rent obligation for the 16th floor through 2025 of $832,000, and a combined rent obligation for the 14th and 16th floors of $2,170,000. We apologize for any inconvenience this may have caused. Happy to answer any questions, Chairman.
Great. Do we have any questions for David? If we have no questions for David, can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Second, Marcia.
Thank you, Marcia. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, the next item on the agenda is the independent external compliance auditor to request to approve award of a external auditor contract. Christine Baker, Chief Legal and Strategic Affairs Officer presenting. Chris.
Thank you, Chairman. The New Jersey Economic Recovery Act requires the EDA to conduct periodic, systematic compliance audits of its economic development incentive programs. The Act defines that term in a way that encompasses most of our programs. Staff recommends engaging an independent external compliance auditor to comply with this requirement. To expedite the procurement process, we took advantage of a state contract procured by the Division of Purchase and Property within the Department of the Treasury. The procurement process is detailed in the board memo. In sum, we solicited all but one of the vendors in the pool created by DPP. One vendor was excluded as a result of a conflict. Mercadian's submission demonstrated its qualifications and its ability to perform the work, and its pricing was reasonable given the work to be performed in the proposed deliverables. Based on the assumption that Mercadian will complete approximately 11 compliance audits per year, our budget would be just over $282,000 per year for a total potential aggregate cost of $564,245. Accordingly, we are asking the board to approve the award of the independent external compliance auditor contract to Mercadian PC, Certified Public Accountants of Princeton, for a one-year term, and if exercised by the authority, one-year renewal option. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Chris? There's no questions for Chris. Can I get a motion to approve?
Elizabeth Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
Second, Wilton.
Thank you, Brian. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? Next item on the agenda, special counsel. Executive Order Number 52, Attorney General Investigation, Holtec and Cooper Legal Actions, Amendment to Retention Agreement. Fred Cole, Senior Vice President, Business Support, presenting. Fred.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning.
This matter is fairly straightforward, and we've seen similar board member memos, rather, to this in the past. The members are asked to approve additional contract funding of $920,000 for a revised fee cap of $4.32 million due to ongoing need for representation related to the subject legal matters with Friedman Kaplan, who is our outside special counsel that represent the authority in so much as its board and staff in these matters. The background of the contract is listed in the memo, and the amount, increases rather on this contract that were done over time are also listed in the memo. To date, there are two legal claims that have been filed against the authority, one from Holtec International and one from Cooper University Hospital. Both companies are Grow New Jersey applicants. The Cooper claim is in an active litigation matter for which Friedman Kaplan is providing continued representation to EDA. For the Cooper matter, Friedman's been engaged in regular contact with Cooper on the status of the New Jersey Grow credits. Through April 30th of 2021, the authority has paid approximately $3.279 million under the retention agreement, and there has been some significant insurance reimbursements under our directors and officers coverage as well. So in summary, the board is being asked to approve an extension of additional funding of $920,000 today. Happy to take any questions.
Any questions for Fred?
Just one amendment for the record. The active litigation is Holtec, not Cooper. There's ongoing matters with Cooper, but it's not litigation. The litigation is Holtec.
Okay. Any other questions or any questions for Fred? All right. There's no discussion. All in favor? Aye.
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 Oh, you know what? I realized I skipped right over a motion to approve. Sorry, folks.
Yeah.
Can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny, I'll do it. I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
I'll second, Marcia.
Thank you, Marcia. You know, I skipped over the really hard thing, I guess. I'm trying. We're close, folks. Hang in there. All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? So, folks, we got two more things to vote on here. Next item is EPA Brownfield Assessment Cooperative Agreement. Elizabeth Limbrick, Director of Brownfields and Sustainable Systems. Elizabeth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We are really pleased to report that the New Jersey Economic Development Authority has been selected to receive a $300,000 Brownfields Assessment Grant from the United States Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA. And this is a very competitive program. Typically, only about 1 in 3 or 1 in 4 applications are selected for an award, so we're very proud to have been selected. And the purpose of this program is to catalyze the transformation of underutilized properties into community assets. In this particular memo, we're requesting that the board authorize the chief executive officer to enter into or execute a cooperative agreement for the $300,000 Brownfield Assessment Grant with EPA. And that's just the cooperative agreement is how EPA refers to their grant agreement. So again, the goal of this program is for EPA to provide funding to the grant recipient, such as ourselves, to perform environmental site assessments, environmental investigation activities, And then a portion of those funds can also be used to develop brownfield inventories, prioritize sites. It can support community involvement. You can conduct planning and also develop site reuse plans with these funds. As we described in our brownfield assessment grant application, we do intend to use these funds to conduct assessment activities at brownfield sites, specifically targeting sites in the Community Collaborative Initiative cities, or the CCI cities. And that ties into that program that we have, which is that really place-based partnership led by the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection and supported by EDA that promotes quality of life in New Jersey's underserved communities that have those multiple complex environmental stressors. So this grant would complement the New Jersey EDA's larger efforts under the leadership of Governor Murphy to promote equitable solutions for environmental and economic well-being. And specifically, this program complements our Brownfield Loan Program as well as our Brownfield Impact Fund, which is forthcoming. And that particular fund is supported by another grant from the EPA, the Brownfield Revolving Loan Fund. In addition, this will also complement our Hazardous Discharge Site Remediation Fund, or HDSRF. So the EPA is currently drafting the cooperative agreement for this assessment grant, and it's not yet available for review. But based on our past experience, we do anticipate that EPA will only provide about a 21-day review period from the time they provide the cooperative agreement and notice of award, and we'll have a time frame to object to anything that's within that, and otherwise that agreement would go into effect. So because that review period is so very limited, staff is requesting delegated authority for the CEO to enter into that cooperative agreement. And, of course, the Deputy Attorney General will review this as well as soon as it becomes available. We anticipate that the terms and conditions for the $300,000 Brownfield Assessment Grant would be substantively the same as the one that's attached to this memo that was for that fiscal year 2020 U.S. EPA Brownfield Revolving Loan Fund grant cooperative agreement. However, the eligible uses of the Brownfield Assessment Grant would be for, again, those eligible programmatic expenses to inventory, characterize, assess, and conduct planning and outreach for brownfield sites, and cleanup activities would not be an eligible use of the Brownfield Assessment Grant Fund. So I just wanted to make that distinction. So again, the funding source is EPA's Brownfield Assessment Grant, $300,000. There is no cost share requirement. New Jersey Economic Development Authority will not need to contribute any funding towards implementation of this grant program. And then if approved, this memo, we would then enter into that cooperative agreement. It's anticipated the agreement would go into effect on October 1st, 2021. And have a performance period of 3 years. So just to recap, this memo is to request authorization to enter into that cooperative agreement with US EPA to receive those grant funds under delegated authority for the CEO to enter into that. That's all I have for this, so thank you, and I'll take any questions.
Great. Thank you, Elizabeth. Do we have any questions for Elizabeth? If there's no questions for Elizabeth, can I get a motion to approve?
Liz Moyo, motion.
Thank you, Liz. Can I get a second?
Elizabeth Dragon, second.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Well, almost our final item here, certainly our final vote. The next item is real estate-oriented. Charles Sarlow heads our real estate committee for the board. Charles, would you like to offer a few comments?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The real estate committee did meet to consider the one matter before the board. It's within the ordinary course of business related to the EDA, and it relates to leasing brokerage services contract for Jones Lang LaSalle, who is the bidder and subject to approval by the board for a two-year term with an option to the board to renew it for one-year renewals up to 3 years. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Charles. So the one item is leasing brokerage services contract, New Jersey Bioscience Center. Juan Burgos, Director of Real Estate Development and Finance, presenting. Juan.
Good morning, members. We're requesting that the members approve the real estate leasing brokers contract at the New Jersey Bioscience Center with JLL for an initial 2-year term with the option to extend for 3 1-year extensions. In April 2021, IPM issued an RFP, and JLL was the only respondent. It was determined that JLL met all the criteria outlined in the RFP and has satisfactorily performed these services for the authority over the last 5 years. The evaluation committee recommends that the authority retain JLL for the 2-year initial term with the option of the authority renewing, exercising 3 1-year options to extend the contract. The proposed commission and override rate are 5% commission and 2.5% the override rate. JLL receives the commission when there is no tenant broker representative. When there is a tenant broker representative, JLL enters into a contract with the tenant broker, and the tenant broker receives the 5%, and JLL receives the override commission. The override commission and the regular commission is the same for the entire term of the contract and for all the leases, and the chart attached shows how the rate is the same for the whole term of the lease. Do you have
All right, do we have any questions for Juan? If we have no questions for Juan, can I get a motion to approve?
Elizabeth Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
Roberto Sobrani, second.
Thank you, Roberto. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, moving on to board memoranda. No votes here. Tim has some FYI memos. Tim?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I should be able to get through this in no more than an hour or two, I promise. I'm kidding. I'll be brief. We have two memos. The one with the most meat in is credit underwriting. I'll just highlight direct loan, lender loans, 23 micro business loans, totaling more than $3 million of additional loan support for small businesses. We continue to see significant volume under the micro business loan program that launched last summer, and hopefully we'll continue to see that over the coming months as we work through that pipeline as well. So lots going on that doesn't generate board votes, and obviously we saw today lots that does generate board votes. So happy to take any questions on those memos.
Right. Do we have any questions for Tim? If we have no questions for Tim, I'd like to move to the public comment portion of our agenda. First, I'd like to ask Danielle Esser, Director of Governance, to read the EDA's public comment policy and the process for this telephonic board meeting, as well as the availability of COVID-19 resources for businesses seeking information. Danielle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As stated by the operator at the beginning of the meeting, members of the public interested in providing public comment can press 1, then 0 on their phone to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue based on the order received. Given the number of members of the public on the call today, we'd like to go over NJEDA's public comment policy at this time, which is also available on the NJEDA website. Each speaker will be prompted by the operator to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization affiliation, and the topic on which the remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit their comments to matters pertaining to the authority. Staff will prompt the speaker once their time has expired. The speaker may not register to speak more than once during the same public comment period to ensure enough time is available for all of those who wish to speak. And as always, speakers may submit any written comments via email to staff. And folks who are interested in availability of COVID-19 resources for businesses we direct you to cv.business.nj.gov, which is staffed by business advocates at the New Jersey Business Action Center. The site includes a chat feature staffed to answer your business-related questions related to COVID-19. As always, you can also reach out to the state's COVID-19 business hotline, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, 1-800-JERSEY-7 or 1-800-537-7397. This portal can also be accessed directly from the NJEDA main page, njeda.com. We look forward to receiving your public comments at this time. Thank you.
See, operator.
I apologize. I was on mute. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press 1 and then 0 on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, you may press 1, then 0 at this time. One moment for our first question.
We have no questions.
Mr. Chairman,
we do have two parties in queue. It's just a moment as we gather their names.
Okay.
We'll go to the line of Earl H. Please go ahead.
My name is Earl Gage. I am president of the Salem City Council in Salem, New Jersey. Good morning to everyone. I am just reaching out because the city is interested in the Serve and Sustain program. That is one of the programs that is sponsored. And Salem City is one of our most distressed cities in the state of New Jersey. It's also one of the smaller cities in the state of New Jersey with under 5,000 people. Our concern is that when we apply for this grant under the Serve and Sustain program, it's very difficult for our local nonprofits to make the criteria or the threshold of 5,000 meals or 30,000 spent to sustain and serve. So therefore, it's very difficult to become eligible for this program. Although the program in Salem City would be very advantageous to our population. So I'm just throwing out there, I don't need answers today or anything else, but just throwing a flag up to say that allowances need to be made for facilities that make their own food, which is common in South Jersey. Weekends are problematic for food serving, and vouchers would be a great help for the folks in restaurants that need it in deep South Jersey here. So I want to thank you for your time, and if you can consider these options going forward, it would be a great help to the city of Salem and I'm sure other smaller communities across the state. Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you, Tim. We continue to kind of take on feedback like that, which is very helpful, and obviously want to be supportive in all 21 counties and particularly the cities and places that need it for that program and lots of others. So happy to follow up with you offline, and our Sustain and Serve team can have a more detailed conversation with you about the requirements and all that. But appreciate the feedback. Thank you.
I apologize. Robert DiDomenico, your line is open.
Oh, thank you. My name is Robert DiDomenico, and my organization is Cargo Fish LLC, and I would like to speak today about the Clean Tech Seed Grant First of all, I'd like to thank the Economic Development Authority for their sponsorship of the program, as well as the Commission on Science, Innovation, and Technology, and specifically Fatou Jobe, Judith Schecht, and Jonathan Ratner, whose informative encouragement and the programs that they are affiliated with have opened my eyes to the opportunity here. CargoFish is a clean tech concern that develops a highly energy efficient last mile distribution utility system for groceries and removal of household waste. It is revolutionary in concept and is being attempted by no other concern anywhere on the globe, as far as I am able to determine. I have provided public comment at the New Jersey Energy Master Plan almost 4 years ago and have participated in invitation think tanks at the EDA. The most recent application round, unfortunately, I did not score in the top 10 or even above the qualifying mark, and for that reason, I greatly appreciate that the EDA and the BPU are cooperating to have a follow-on round for the Clean Tech Seed Grant. I would encourage any of you who take an interest in seeing merit given an opportunity to provide great benefit to the state and the country to learn what you can at cargofish.com or on my LinkedIn profile. I make no secret of the work that I'm trying to do. I do it for the benefit it will bring, and I take great risk and personal sacrifice in this attempt. So I certainly appreciate the help, and, well, it's a kind of a family tradition. I just sent my youngest son to the Air Force Academy. He's in the class of 2025, and I just welcomed my oldest son back from United States Marine Corps Basic Training and Integrated Training Battalion, both of whom are now serving their country as I did years ago, 6 years active duty in the United States Navy. So, again, I'll do my best to put an application in that's above the line and succeeds next time. And I certainly appreciate the extra opportunity to do it. Thank you all.
This is Brian Sabino, the Chief Economic Growth Officer for the Authority. First and foremost, thank you so much for your service, and thank you for your son and your family's service. It's eternally appreciated. Second, thank you for your shout-out to our phenomenal staff. We're excited about the partnership that we've been able to build with the BPU as well as with the Commission and all the great work that we're able to support. And as you know, New Jersey has long been a logistics state, and in over the last 10 years and certainly the last three, become a national leader as a clean energy state. So we're excited that we have these programs, and we look forward to working with our partners and working with you as you apply into the second round of the Clean Tech Seed Grant program. So thank you so much for your comments.
And once again, if you have any questions or comments, it is press 10 at this time. We'll go to the line of Mayor Washington. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Board. This is Mayor Charles Washington calling on behalf of the City of Salem. You already heard from my council president. I, too, just had some comments regarding our service sustain grant. The City of Salem is in desperate need of this grant allocation towards the City of Salem. The threshold that is required, like the 5,000 mills and the 30,000 spent, just to kind of put in perspective, that would be about 10% of our entire county would need to be serviced by this one nonprofit provider. And I think oftentimes in small municipalities and in the southern region of New Jersey, you have agencies who are well-intended and are doing good work, but they fall short with getting support from the state because they never can just meet those thresholds. And while I think we have some good nonprofits, particularly Mills on Wheels in Salem County, doing great work, and are housed in the city of Salem, they just cannot meet those thresholds, but they are doing a tremendous job with providing food services throughout the county, and particularly in the city of Salem, where we are the number one distressed city in the state. You know, we have a lot of children that depend on food from the school districts, and when the school is closed, that becomes a strain. We have a lot of single-parent households where the parents are working and the children are left to fend for themselves. So if there was a possibility that we could be considered for vouchers, I think this would go a long way with just helping not just the relationship with the state, but also helping households and family members throughout the city of Salem. And I just ask that you would give consideration to the comments that I've made and also the Council President Earl Gage's move as well. Thank you.
Hey, Mayor, it's Tim Sullivan. Great to hear your voice, and hope you're well.
Hey, you're well.
Appreciate the comments here. Again, I think our sustain and serve team obviously, I think, wants to get as many folks into the program and serve as broadly as we can here. We are in the process of taking applications now for this, and I'm sure we can have a follow-up as early as today with you and your team to workshop this a bit and see if there's a way to meet the program requirements, but also get some new applicants in from your part of the state. So why don't we take that offline, but we appreciate the sentiment and want to meet you there if we can.
We have no further questions in queue. Please continue.
Great. Thank you, Operator. If there are no additional comments, I'd like to thank everyone for their participation, and I will now make a motion to adjourn the meeting. Can I get a second?
I'll second. 30 seconds.
All right, Jenny. You're always there for me. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
That concludes our meeting. Thank you, everyone, so much. Enjoy the rest of July.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T conferencing service. You may now disconnect.